Welcome, everyone, to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. All right, this evening we are in paper 46, section 4, which is old single column, page 522. All right, so we got into this paper a ways. Remember, this is the local system headquarters paper. And after they gave us some basics about the physical aspects, including the broadcast transmission and receive aspects of the broadcasts. Now we're finally ready to get into the meat of it here, the meat of this paper, with the description of the circles, as they're called. And they're going to start us with this this little paragraph of just a little brief overview of using these geometric terms to describe kind of the basic way they lay out the structured areas on these worlds. Remember, there are significant regions that that aren't covered with heavy duty structured facilities and whatnot, but there's more just kind of open space. When they do create areas that are meant for very precise work usages or what have you, they go grand. Okay, there's nothing sort of just, well, let's put a little building for this over here and maybe another little building for that. I mean, they produce these massive structures, as we're about to see here. Okay, so and maybe just right up front with, when they say residential and administrative areas, when they're talking about residential areas, they're not just talking about, this is a place, this isn't the suburbs where you just go to sleep, okay? This is where you reside. And everyone who resides, is a resident of a particular world, resides there because they have a job to do there. Right? I mean, the universe was created to be inhabited, and inhabitants were created to do something as well as be something. Right? So everyone is up to things. Yes, there are places of just relaxing space and whatnot. But in general, we're talking about vast domains where a certain subset of tasks are done. All right, so let's see what they say here.
4, residential and administrative areas. Considerable portions of Gersim are assigned as residential areas, while other portions of the system capital are given over to the necessary administrative functions involving the supervision of the affairs of 619 inhabited spheres, 56 transition culture worlds, and the system capital itself. On Gersim and in Nebadon, these arrangements are designed as follows. 1, the circles, the non-native residential areas. 2, the squares, the system executive administrative areas. 3, the rectangles, the rendezvous of the lower native life. 4, the triangles, the local or Gersim administrative areas. This arrangement of the system activities into circles, squares, rectangles, and triangles is common to all the system capitals of Nebadon. In another universe, an entirely different arrangement might prevail. These are matters determined by the diverse plans of the Creator's sons.
Okay. So now, you know, especially wanted you to read all the way through to that last little bit. Yeah, because you're left kind of puzzled. It all seems so kind of simplistic in a way, you know, that you've got structures that are modeled after these simple geometric forms of circles, squares, rectangles, and triangles. Yeah, but when they throw in that little bit, in another universe, an entirely different arrangement might prevail. You know, you're left to just wonder, what does this all mean? I mean, so apparently there's some profound, you know, relationship to the patterns in the pattern universe. You know, remember, every local system is tied back to a particular world in the central universe, its pattern world. You know, and so apparently in some very basic way, you know, using circles for non-native residential areas rather than for the local or GRSM administrative areas is some profound issue that ties it back to a specific world, whereas in another local universe, it has to be the other way or it wouldn't relate back. I mean, so something very, very mysterious is behind all this. And then on top of that, it's... you know, it obviously isn't kind of lost in fascination with complexity. You know, you don't have octagons, you know, or whatever, you know, 50-sided things or something like this. It's all, you know, it's these most simple. And then, you know, the other thing that you notice, okay, circles, squares, triangles, and of course, when you say triangle, you're probably immediately thinking in an equilateral triangle. So these very symmetric things. But then there's rectangles. Okay. And so that strikes you. It's like, huh, so they purposely have an asymmetry to them, you know, a lesser symmetry, let's say it that way, than a square. And you look there, the rendezvous of the lower native life. So, I mean, you see an immediate correspondence there of the lower native life doesn't embody as great a symmetry as the higher life, and, you know, and literally the shapes of the structures related to them are not as symmetric. So, you know, you can begin to see a little bit, you know, maybe you could spend some more time reflecting on why it might make sense that one is a circle and not a square. But, you know, in some deep way, you know this is all setting the stage for a very distant time when there's an extreme degree of power personality synthesis. And certain personalities can't synthesize with power of the improper shape. Right? I mean... that just the fact that what they're doing is in a circular context must have something to do with that eventual power personality synthesis with those types of beings. So that's about as far as we can go, but you can, you know, you want to just sort of let your imagination be in that sort of mysterious space of what the potential is here.
Is this the shape of an enclosing wall?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the basic idea that, I mean, there's lots of detail that isn't all going to be circular, right? But the major scale geography or, well, I mean, at this level, it's sort of, it's almost like a landscape or topography because it's so huge, but the major way in which things are sculpted, you know, it's of the first order. It's circular, and then other things of a, you know, of a higher order. yeah. So, and you know, we'll definitely see that when we get to the circles. It's because they give us a lot of detail about the circles. Okay. So now the one thing, you know, when they say on Gerasim and in Nebadon, these arrangements are designed as follows. You know, they then subsequently say common to all system capitals. But you're left kind of wondering exactly I mean, you know, when they say on Gerasim and in Abaddon that first time, it's making you think that maybe the constellations and the local universe headquarters must fit into this pattern some too, but you're not really sure what to make of that. You know, you remember, we didn't get any great detail like this back when we were reading about the constellation or the local universe headquarters. So, you know, I don't know. You know, it may be the case that since it's the local systems that are directly tied to the pattern worlds, that's the sort of very pure expression. And maybe as you go up to constellations and then the local universe headquarters, there's some sort of synthesizing. So it may not be just like this, you know, where they have circles, squares, triangles, you know, rectangles, etc., you know, on those higher architectural worlds. I don't know.
Yep. No, I've forgotten. The pattern worlds in Kavona are indicative of the systems or the universes.
There's a billion local systems in each super universe. That's not a coincidence. That's because there's a billion worlds in Havona, right? One Havona world is tied to one system. Now, of course, you know, actually you have one Havona world that has a sevenfold expression, you know, one local system in each super universe, right? So there's seven local systems, one in each super universe, that tie back to one Havona world.
You could say we have a sister local system.
Yeah, so each of the other six, yeah, super universes, we have a sister local system, yes. Okay. That in some way is, another facet of that Havona world that we're tied to. Yeah.
Well, so if there are a billion worlds in the super universes, the other six super universes, they will also have...
Right, just like I said, there's a billion local systems in each super universe. Right?
Yeah.
Right. So there's 7 billion local systems.
Right.
Right. But there's 1 billion Havona worlds.
Right.
Right. So one Havona world goes to one local system in each super universe.
Okay.
Right? Okay. There's a sevenfold downstepping of that pattern world into the super universes.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Did we get everything else in there? Maybe just, you know, also keep in mind right up front, because, like, you know, that's why they gave it to you up front, that you don't, you aren't just administering the nativity worlds. You know, I mean, you've got all of these big happening worlds, those 56 transitional culture worlds. You know, remember, the seven of them are 10 times the radius of the Earth. I mean, those are great big affairs with an awful lot of stuff going on them. So, I mean, you know, you've got a lot of administration to just manage the 57 worlds there of the local system headquarters, not to mention the 619 nativity worlds that we have out there right now. So... You know, if it's 10 times the diameter, it's how many times the surface area?
Cubed.
It's squared. Surface area, it's squared, 100 right? 100 times. 100 you know, times so, 100. I mean, you know, you've got a surface area that's like 100 nativity worlds.
Is it Jerusalem, or are you talking about? No.
The primary satellites.
Like Jerusalem's even bigger.
Gerasim is 100 times, right? So that's 10,000, right? But yeah, I mean, then they mentioned that's the other thing. I mean, you've got effectively 10,000 Earth-like surface areas to manage just on Gerasim. Right? I mean, that's more space than when this local system is fully developed with roughly 1,000 worlds. Right? Just Gerasim has more space to manage than all of the nativity worlds. Right? So this is a, you know, just remember, there's an awful lot that has to be there just to make that local system headquarters happen. It doesn't self-manage, right? It has to be managed.
Don't take up any space. So Chris, the 619 worlds, do you think any of those are enlightened life, would you guess?
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, Because, you know, it appears that you've got maybe roughly 200 done in a batch, you know. So, you know, you've got three batches there. So, I mean, that first batch was a long, long, long time ago. Yeah. You know, so, you know, they've had billions of years to get deeply enlightened life and stuff. So, yeah. All right. Let's just chug forward here.
Our narrative of these residential and administrative areas takes no account of the vast and beautiful estates of the material sons of God, the permanent citizens of Gerizim. Neither do we mention numerous other fascinating orders of spirit and near-spirit creatures. For example, Gerizim. How do you want to say that?
Either way. Just
Gerizim enjoys the efficient services of the Spiranja of design for system function. These beings are devoted to spiritual ministry in behalf of the supermaterial residents and visitors. They are a wonderful group of intelligent and beautiful beings who are the transition servants of the higher Marantia creatures and of the Marantia helpers who labor for the upkeep and embellishment of all Marantia creations. They are on Gerizim what the Midway creatures are on Urantia, Midway helpers functioning between the material and the spiritual.
Okay, so two things. First, that little passing comment at the beginning about the material sons and daughters. Remember back when they brought them up before, they mentioned that these circles, these giant circular structures that we're about to read about, there's a whole bunch of these giant circular facilities that are built in a certain sector of Gerizim, but in the middle of that whole vast domain where these circular structures are located is not a circular, but just the central region of that whole sector is where the vast estates of the material sons and daughters are. You know, they all have, remember how they use the word estates, they all have vast estates. So there's a huge area somehow centrally located in this whole sector of these circles where the material sons and daughters live and work and raise their families, and where, you know, a lot of us may have to go and work with those families to get experience raising children or whatnot.
Is there any indication anywhere in the papers of the size of these material sons and daughters estates?
No, they don't give us any specifics other than describing them as vast, you know. So remember, it's going to include farmland and all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Right. So they're very big estates. So those will, you know,
spending so much time there.
You know, when we imagine sort of an idyllic place to live, you know, our thoughts would project to their residences, whatever you want to call them. Their land. You know, that would be something that we could kind of imagine a bit. You know, beautiful mown, fields and you know, white fences or whatnot. You know, whatever you want to imagine for an incredible estate. You know, there would be some truth to your imaginings related to their establishments. But the other stuff is going to be very, very beyond anything we could imagine when we start reading about the circles. Okay, so besides this very kind of not described area where the material sons and daughters are, notice they finally picked up a little thread that they initiated quite a ways back in these papers about the local universe, the Spiranga. Does anyone remember who they are? Who are the parents of the Spiranga? You know, not the Spiranja, the Spiranga.
Oh, Michael and Moon.
No, and it's not the Creator, Son, Creator, Mother, Spirit. They're not created beings, they're procreated beings. And the parents are the bright morning star and the Father Melchizedek. Right? Remember how they just, you know, kind of introduced them briefly, mentioned that they were these spirit helpers, like they're describing in a little bit more detail here. But, you know, they give you an interesting little tidbit there, that you have some of these phenomena of design for system function. So Gabriel and the father Melchizedek, when they procreate, they can, you know, it isn't just, well, whatever comes out of the procreation comes out of the procreation. They have some sort of very precise ability to come into some liaison and produce some that are designed for the local system or, you know, whatever else they might be designed for. So just notice that interesting little thing that, you know, instead of having the procreation designed by the life carriers and kind of just built into the system, the electrochemical system, and we just are cogs in that whole phenomenon of procreating their designs. Gabriel and the Father Melchizedek are the designers and the procreators. So that's kind of an interesting little element. And see, and because they're procreated, not created, that's why they mentioned back when they bring them up that, no, it's not like you might expect. They're not mortal. You know, they're procreated, but they're immortal. And they're much more of a spirit, what we would think of as a spirit type being than, you know, than a material type being, which we immediately think of when we think of procreation. But, you know, they've thrown in this addition that you don't want to think of them as extremely high spirit nature beings. They're paralleling to the midway creatures. Right? So they have a nature that can be in the middle and kind of interface with the spectrum of whatever is going on in that world. You know, more spirit-like stuff on one end, more material-like stuff on the other end, and they're in the middle in some way, you know, helping to be an intermediary to glue the whole complex logistics together. Yeah.
Now, there must be quite a few of them.
Right, and there must be an uncountable number
Gabriel
of them.
Gabriel and the Father Melchizedek,
yep, they're the sole procreators of however many trillions or whatever there are.
They don't procreate.
Yeah, because they don't procreate themselves, no.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not reproducing beings. I mean, there's very few beings in the universe that are reproducing, right? You know, seraphim don't reproduce. You know, there's very few beings that are reproducing, you know, so we may be the lowest of the low in terms of the beings, but we're reproducing beings. Material sons and daughters are reproducing beings. You know, that's the exception, not the rule. Most of the time, if you need lots of beings of a certain flavor, the creators of those beings just have to produce a whole bunch of them. They can't just produce a few and let them, you know, and say, go forth and multiply, right? Like the Bible says.
A lot of time
but the Creator Son and the Creator Mother Spirit do that, right, with the material sons and daughters, right? They just make one pair, you know, only one pair for each local system are directly created by them. They send that pair of material sons and daughters to that local system and they say, go forth and multiply, right? And all the, you know, the countless numbers of material sons and daughters that local system is going to need all stem from that original pair that were created, and all the others were procreated. Okay. You know, and we all know how busy Adam and Eve are with procreation. I mean, you know, how many are Adam and Eve? How many children they had on Gerizim? How many they had here? You know, even how many, you know, Adamson and Rada, you know, had. They were, you know. Right. I mean, these beings think in very aggressive procreative terms, right? It's just a, you know, they're just engines of procreation. Okay. You know, which, you know, seems just makes sense. I mean, you think about the fact that the whole local system stems from one pair, right? Then we have to just, that's just part of their mentality, right? That they're, that they see themselves very fundamentally as a procreative engine. Okay.
Elizabeth.
Oh, something else, yeah.
Well, Chris, there's a question on the webinar.
Yep.
Pam, what or who is a supermaterial resident?
So all of, you know, see, they were using that term supermaterial residents and visitors to remind you of what I was just saying. So you have beings that are material, like material sons and daughters, or close to that, material-like. And then you have, you know, all the beings that you wouldn't immediately describe as material. Their blend of energy is much more what, you know, you'd want to call spiritual. You know, so super material is just a substitute for spiritual. But why did they do that? Why didn't they just say, you know, on behalf of the spiritual residents and visitors? Because, like I said, they're trying to get you to think of, you've got some beings in the middle, and you sort of have those below and those above. The prefix super means above, right? So they're just trying to visualize it with their choice of words for you to get you to think in a simple vertical sense of, you've got a vertical spectrum from material to spiritual, even though that's simplistic, right? We know it's much more complicated than just a simple linear spectrum of energies. But they're not trying to give you anything complicated here. They're just saying, well, forget about all the details. Just kind of think in a simplistic way where you've got beings spread across a vertical spectrum. There's beings above the spranaja and beings below, or the spiranga, excuse me, beings above and beings below. And just, you know, get an initial sense that they're kind of midway in that vertical spectrum. Okay, anything else? Let's see, I think that was about it. Because, I mean, other than just, you know, noting to yourself, you know, that this is what little you kind of get about the details about these beings. You know, they are a wonderful group of intelligent and beautiful beings, but they're transition servants, right? Note when they use words like that, that there's lots of beings that, you know, function in a very horizontal way. They're going to use the word servant like that to indicate that there's no ascending or descending nature to them. They serve the needs of a particular level in the universe of universes. And they just do that with endless patience and peace of mind. There's no tension that they've been doing this same job, you know, for 20 billion years. You know, there's nothing like that in them. You know, they're not anxious to get about, you know, can I have nobler work or anything like that, right? They're very satisfied with their role because they were made that way. We weren't made that way. We were made to be fundamentally not satisfied with being at a given level in the hierarchy for any length of time. I mean, to a fault, even. Right, where we get ahead of ourselves. You know, we want to be zooming forward, you know, and it's like, well, you haven't done, you know, what you need to do here yet. It's like, well, I'm not interested in that anymore. I want to go on, you know. And, right. So, all right. So just, you know, make sure you don't falsely transfer your sensibilities to them, thinking that they must be walking around in leg irons, right? Being forced, you know, in indentured servitude here. They are delighted every day like you can't even imagine being delighted yet, right? All right.
The system capitals are unique in that they are the only worlds which exhibit well-nigh perfectly all three phases of universe existence, the material, the morontial, and the spiritual. Whether you are a material, morontia, or spirit personality, you will feel at home on Gerasim. So also do the combined beings, such as the midway creatures and the material sons.
Okay, again, a couple little things there. The first one, we were referring to this very important aspect of the local system that you never want to, you know, let drift too far away from the foreground of your mind, that they are the immediate expressions, the immediate footprints of a Havona world. So when they say that they are they exhibit well-nigh perfectly all three phases of universe existence, the material, the morontial, and the spiritual, what they're doing is they're hearkening you back. I mean, it's in paper 14 about the central universe.
Page?
Page 14.
Page 14.
Yeah. Paper 14, Section 4, you don't need to go there. Paper 14, Section 4, just, you know, for the recording here, for reference sake for people, they talk about the creatures of the central universe there. And there's a, if you can remember way back when we went through that, there's a list there of seven basic forms of living things, is the way they described it. And they were material, morontial, spiritual, absonite, ultimate, co-absolute, absolute. Okay, well, set aside the absonite, ultimate, co-absolute, and absolute. But notice how that list starts. Something that might have something to do with the finite. Material, morontial, and spiritual. Right? On the, each of those Avona worlds, there are all three of those types of beings. Material, morontial, and spiritual. So it's not like you leave behind material and morontial. They're right there in the pattern on that Avona world. So that threefold pattern is being expressed in the universe of universes, and its immediate expression point before it then diffuses out into the whole universe of universes, that immediate expression point is the local system. Yeah, especially the local system, headquarters world. Okay? So that's why the local systems are unique, in that they are the only worlds which exhibit well-nigh perfectly all three phases of universe existence, the material, the morontial, and the spiritual. That's just reminding you of that very immediate linkage of a pattern expression that's there on Gerasim. Okay, so that's what's going on there, you know, because that might, you know, strike you as odd if you start to think about it. Why should it, you know, why should they be well-nigh perfectly exhibited there and not on Salvington, say? Isn't Salvington a higher domain? And right? So, you know, there's limits to how much you can rationalize in some simplistic, vertical, linear fashion. You know, it isn't as simple as that. Sometimes the first is last, and the last is first. Okay? All right. Then the other thing there, so that you appreciate in passing what they're saying, and it says, so also do the combined beings, such as the midway creatures and the material suns. So also do the combined beings. All right, so just a simple picture there. Again, we were just referring to that midway phenomenon, thinking in that spectrum where there's spirit on the top end and material on the bottom end. Okay, so if we think about the primary midwayers, the secondary midwayers, and the material suns, okay, and they're saying that all three of those, to some degree, are quote-unquote combined beings, that there's a materialness to them and a spiritualness to them in some literal energetic way. You know, their bodies are in some way a little bit of each. Okay, with the primary midwayers, they are predominantly what you would call a spirit being. They are intellectually and spiritually energized like a seraphim. So they're kind of a seraphim-like being, but they, in a very sort of subtle way that's not immediately obvious at all, they have some sort of material energy associated with that sort of mostly spirit-like nature. Okay? So, and that's the way they're combined. On the other end is the material sons. And they're called material sons and daughters. Okay, so basically they're like we are. A material body, and they have agitant mind, you know, seated on that electrochemical mechanism, just like we do, but in a very subtle way that we never can quite figure out from what they say, they've got a little bit of spirit energy nature. Now you can, you know, kind of speculate that about that a little bit, because you know they have these this additional energy that they're engaged with on Gerasim, or if they're Adam and Eve's, they have this additional circulatory system in the Tree of Life thing and stuff. Okay, all of that is alluding to some sort of physical energy that is very subtle in some way, so that it impinges upon spirit energy, and this spirit energy is slightly involved in their nature, so that they're a combined being.
So they don't age.
Right, it helps, right, to, you know, to overrule the, you know, the aging process and those sorts of things, yeah. So those are the beings on the two ends, but there's no immediate way that they seem like combined. They can kind of seem material and spiritual from what little we know. But the ones in the middle, the secondary midwares, you can understand very directly their quote-unquote combined nature. Okay? So they have, they are physically energized by the Adamic, you know, or the material son and daughter-like technique. And they're spiritually energized by this seraphic, right? They tell you that point blank, you know, if you recall back when they mentioned that not too many papers ago. So right there, they tell you very definitively, you have a material son and daughter-like material energy and a seraphim-like spirit energy that's combined. There's nothing subtle about one of them. They're kind of equal presence. Okay, and the material side, remember it's not so material that you can seat all seven adjutants on it, but you can seat the sixth and the seventh. You know, they have the sixth and the seventh adjutant. But the rest of their mindedness is Morantia mind. Right? Besides the sixth and seventh adjutant, they literally have Morantia mind. I mean, the material sons and daughters, or the primary midwayers, don't have Morantia mind. See, you know, they're like I told you, one of us using kind of like seraphic-like mind energy, and the material sons and daughters are using adjutant mind energy. But the secondary midwayers predominantly are using Morantia mind energy. That shows you how in balance the two, the physical and the spiritual energies are. That it's very much like Morantia substance, where the two energies are woven together, and you can seat this Morantia mind on it. Okay, so combined in a very overt way, see, the spiritual and the physical energy.
That's like a spectrum, then.
Right. See, so you have this whole spectrum, right? And you know, the far end on the material end of the combined spectrum is material sons and daughters. If you go any farther, it's not combined anymore. It's us. We're not. We don't have any immediate, you know, spirit energy identified with our, you know, the energetics of our body. You know, we're reaching up to that. It's not, you know, inherent in our nature like it is with the material son and daughter. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know why it's never occurred to me before, but I find it surprising that the to not comprehend that the material sons and daughters have adjutant minds.
If they didn't have adjutant mind, how could they mate with humans? They are just like us, basically.
I thought they would get the adjutants when they drop down.
Yeah. I mean, again, they're. I mean, I could go to Gerasim and mate with them. All right. I mean, they're like us there. They aren't just like us after they're downstepped. They have no adjusters, but they have adjutant mind. Okay, now they're using adjutant mind to its fullest. We won't use adjutant mind like that until we're well settled in light and life. We talked about this not too long ago, a session or two back, I think. Remember that when humans are well into light and life on a world. They've been genetically engineered to the point where they are, you know, the equivalent of material sons and daughters. And at that point, they do start to be a little bit of a combined being. They start to have, you know, you'll be able to see the lower spiritual beings and stuff, you know, as a mortal. Okay, so you're much more like a material son and daughter at that point in ways we can't imagine right now. But But right now, you're not at all. Okay? So you can just imagine how much more of a spiritualized adjutant mind you can have if you've got a little bit of a spirit energy nature that's inherent in your physics. Right? So material sons and daughters, or those humans deep in light and life, can produce much more profound spiritualized mind. It's not, when you think about the adjutant mind that the material sons and daughters are using, don't think, well, they're using the first adjutant, like an amoeba does, and the second adjutant, like a trout does. Okay. They're not using the adjutants in that lowly way. They're mostly using the adjutants in a harmonized, spiritualized mind way. But, that adjutant mind has to be in its seven phases to some degree. It can't be completely blended together because it has to seat on a material foundation. Okay? A fully blended mind like Maranja mind can't seat on a literal electrochemical mechanism like we have. But they have that, They've got a brain just like you have a brain, right? And a heart just like you have a heart, And so when you talk about mechanical mind, they have mechanical mind identified with their bodies just like we do, only they're using mechanical mind at its highest levels of energetics that we don't use mechanical mind up to that level. That's why their bodies give off that violet glow. That's the interface of those highest aspects of that mechanical mind with their physical bodies. Wow. Right? If you were using mechanical mind at those high levels, you'd glow in the dark too. Okay? Right? I see, so they're using they're using mechanical mind and adjutant mind, at their maximum levels, right? Whereas a bacterium uses mechanical mind at the lowest levels in many ways. Okay. All right, let's see. What else do we have here? I think I got it all there, didn't I? Okay, so, all right, just if you really think about that spectrum, like we just did with those three elements, the primaries, the secondaries, and the material sons and daughters, you can get a little bit better feel for how it is that material sons and daughters or their offspring could give rise to secondary midwayers, right? Yeah. See, there is this ability to take what's recessive in a material son and daughter and make it more dominant in an offspring. Okay? The spiritual part of material son and daughter is very much recessive. It's not the dominant thing, or they would be called spiritual sons and daughters. Right? It's a recessive energetics. But,
it's there.
Right? But, you saw that with Adamson and Radha. Right? Every fourth one, so the recessive one, right? You were getting that recessive nature being put forward in the progenitors of the secondary midwayers. Okay? All right.
Gerasim has great buildings of both material and Maranja types, while the embellishment of the purely spiritual zones is no less exquisite and replete. If I only had words to tell you of the Maranja counterparts of the marvelous physical equipment of Gerasim, if I could only go on to portray the sublime grandeur and exquisite perfection of the spiritual appointments of this headquarters world. Your most imaginative concept of perfection, of beauty, and repleteness of appointment would hardly approach these grandeurs. And Gerasim is but the first step on the way to supernal perfection of paradise beauty.
I see. So that's why I was saying, really your imagination is trying to reach toward what the material sons and daughters estates are like. And everything else is completely beyond your imagination. Okay, but it will be, you will just stand there, mouth gaping wide open, stepping on your lower lip, for ages, trying to absorb what you're going to be experiencing there. It's going to be so incredible. Now, notice one little thing that they did there. You know, we've talked about how there's, you know, there's two sort of quote-unquote natural, if you will, substances, material substance and spirit substance, and then this artificial Marantia substance in between. Notice how they didn't talk about buildings made out of the three substances altogether in one sentence there. Gerasim has great buildings of both material and Marantia types. Okay, so they're reminding you that it's just a little bit of an extrapolation for you to imagine buildings being made out of Marantia substance. It's going to be kind of like a fancy material substance building, because Marantia means that which is akin to matter. But it is also the case that, you know, buildings are made out of spirit substance too. But see, they set that apart. While the embellishment of the purely spiritual zones is no less exquisite and replete. Just as a subtle little reminder that, you know, allow exactly what it's going to be like to experience spirit being used as a building material to not be very analogous to what you, you know, think about it with material substance being used as a building material. Okay, but it is in some way that's really beyond our imagination, you know, used as a building material. You know, and that's the reason it's not really imaginal is because spirit substance is a unity substance. Physical substance is an individuality substance. And that's understandable to us. Individuality substance could make individual bricks for a building. How you're supposed to think about how a unity substance could, you know, make building elements, right? That's a non sequitur, right? So that's the way they do things like that. Just a subtle little reminder in the way they constructed it. You know, even if you didn't notice it consciously, unconsciously you would have assimilated their statement in a separateness like that, where you had the material and the Marantia on one side and the spirit substance on the other side. They're trying to help you unconsciously to organize these thoughts better in your mind. Let's see. So if you only had words, right? Again, because it's all completely beyond our imaginative abilities. Other than that, you will want to bliss out in it. It will be sublime beyond belief. You know, and maybe just the one thing, you know, when they say perfection of beauty, just to remind you again, the fact of beauty is not a quality nor a property of any of the substances themselves. To begin to recognize that if you look at a physical scene and say that's beautiful, don't make the mistake of assuming that beauty is some sort of a substance, you know, as it were, that's painted on the material objects. You know, that it is the material objects. Beauty is not an element in the experiential domain directly like that. It's not a stuff. If you put stuff, substance, in a certain arrangement, the pattern of the Isle of Paradise, the pattern of the Isle of Paradise is beauty. That pattern, that beauty, can shine through that arrangement. If you see something as beautiful, you're not seeing beautiful things. You're seeing the beauty of the Isle coming through those things. It's important to recognize that beauty is transcendent of the objects, so that you don't improperly confuse the kind of truth that's in truth, beauty, goodness, with the kind of truth that's in truth, fact, goodness. Right? People have always done this. And it's led to very unfortunate material idealistic efforts on humans' part. Now, when you think that this initial truth that you have an awareness of in your inner life by grace, if you assume that that truth is tied to material fact rather than to beauty, which is transcendent of material fact, you know, so you blur the spiritual and the material together, and you get very fixated on making you know, temples of worship where it's all about the material objects, rather than recognizing, you know, that what you should have a sense of sacredness for is not the material objects, but the potential for those objects to be arranged so that the existential shines through them. Right? It'll keep you from fixating on the lowly. It'll keep your chin up and your eyes directed towards eternity where it should be in that regard. That the truths of existential eternity, the kind of truth that's related to beauty and goodness, you know, is not tied to the immediate matter, mind, spirit, energy, experiential domain, right? It's the patterns of the existential domain shining through the experiential. Keep it separate like that. Keep things appropriately in their place, so that you don't falsely exalt the experiential as the existential, and, you know, and lead to basically turning those material objects into idols.
Right? Is this idea of arrangement a little bit like the golden mean or the measurements that have been worked out for the perfect human face, you know, the exact width between your eyes, and, you know, like some, we think some people are just so beautiful because they've got all of that, all their features arranged just perfectly.
Mm-hmm. I'm purposely not trying to go into this kind of the precise physics of it. It's what we do in the latter part of Reawakening Philosophy 1. I mean, it isn't technically the figuration, the arrangement, literally, it's the configuration, it's the form. There's an element of reality that humans don't fully appreciate called form. And pattern actually gets to us through form, as patterned form. When you see beauty, what you're seeing is what you're aware of. You're aware of the patterned form, and the form is not the object itself, or even literally the arrangement of those things. It's the configuration. It's the figuration that's with that figuration. That's the prefix con, means with. Right? There's a figuration, but there's a configuration. There's a form, and it's through that form that pattern manifests. And, you know, just to appreciate that you've been given the ability to see, quote unquote, what really is not seeable. Right? It's insight that allows you to be aware of the form and the pattern that shines through that form, not sight. Your sight sees the blob of matter. Your insight sees the form that's associated with that matter and the beauty that comes through that form, right? Only your insights can be aware of that. See, to appreciate what's going on there, to not degrade it into thinking that it's an issue of sight. You don't have sight of the beauty of a sunset. You have insight into the beauty of a sunset.
Yeah, and you can't see music, but you think it's beautiful.
Beautiful, right. Right, and again, the beauty is not the, you know, the literal substance of the hearing. Right, to recognize that you have an insight that transcends the substance of the hearing of the music. You know, and that insight is aware of beauty that's associated with that substance.
Perhaps the way I could try to express it is, It's more of an emotion that comes through the...
It's not an emotion, it's not going out, but it's a feeling. The word you're looking for is... Right. You, right, I mean, you feel,
right,
quote unquote, these insights.
But it's not an emotion.
Well, remember, emotion means, you know, that you're manifesting it outward physiologically.
Okay.
That might happen, right?
Yeah.
Right. It may be such a profound feeling that it impacts your physiology,
yeah,
and you emote it.
But it is.
Right. Remember, the Revelators say there's really only one word that you guys can use for what we're talking about here, this awareness. You know, it's a feeling.
Right.
Okay.
And you get that through music. You feel it.
Right. Right.
It's a beauty that it's,
right,
not something you're seeing. It's something that...
Right. And just remember, no matter what sense you're talking about, you know, smell, taste, whatever, you know, that there's a form that you have an insight to, and hence an awareness of, that you can attach an existential fact to, like it's beautiful. Right? Beauty is an existential fact. It's not an experiential fact. Beauty just is.
Yeah.
It's the beauty of eternity shining into space and time. Space and time is not generating that beauty. It's not the source of that beauty. The existential is the source of that beauty. Specifically, the Isle of Paradise is the source of all beauty. Not the first source and center, not the second source and center, not the third source and center. The Paradise source in the center is the source of all beauty. It's the pattern of the Isle. You're seeing the pattern through form.
So, let's take music for a second.
Yeah.
And in some other point in the book, they talk about music being basically mathematical formulas.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, is that the form?
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. There's an arrangement. There's a figuration that you're immediately sort of aware of in a simple sensory sense.
Mm-hmm.
But just appreciate that there's something that's with that figuration, something that's with that mathematical figuration. There's a form, a configuration that you can't touch, taste, feel, see, hear, but you are aware of because you have insight, because you have the first cosmic intuition, and the second cosmic intuition, and the third cosmic intuition. Because you have those three insights, you are aware of these things that transcend immediate awareness of sensation, right? The immediate awareness of the mathematical, like, you know, aspects of the rhythm or whatever. There's something beyond that that you've been given the ability to be aware of, that an animal can't be aware of.
Yeah.
Is that like,
right,
harmonics? Only not in kind?
It's, yeah. I mean, just, you know, like when you think of fundamentals and harmonics, you know, how you're going, in a sense, going more and more transcendent. Take that to the nth degree, that there's something that's transcendent of the highest harmonic, if you will. Right? And in that transcendent encompassment of that fact, there is beauty and truth and goodness, possibly, flowing from eternity into your awareness.
I saw a series of pictures online the other day of a grouping of just really unbelievably beautiful horses that are the product of selective breeding by this group of people in Spain who, over a period of years and years and years, have been working to achieve something, and the penultimate horse that they've come up with,
or even the ultimate, maybe
the ultimate, yeah, is really a creature that I could hardly believe I was looking, that it was real. It looked like a statue of marble. It was shimmering. It was yellow gold. It looked like it had satin for skin.
Mm-hmm.
And it was perfectly shaped. It looked like anotherworldly creature. I could hardly believe it was of this planet.
Right. See, so I mean,
sure,
think
it wasn't Photoshop.
Think about the celestial artisans, right? So, you know, and how there's that potential for higher and higher levels of artistic arrangement of things, even living things, where more and more the beauty of the aisle begins to manifest through that. And, you know, again, you know, we've read about the celestial artisans. The first celestial artisans that seeded that whole group of beings came from where? From the central universe, yes, right? They came from eternity, right? They come out from eternity to try to teach the people of time how to arrange things in space and time so that eternity can manifest through them. How the existential can be present with the experiential.
Well, whoever came up with this plan is pretty smart.
Okay? That's why they come from there, because that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to get the existential to shine forth with the experiential. You know, that configuration, to be with it. And you've been given an ability to be aware of that existentialness in addition to, you know, your awareness of the experientialness.
You may not always recognize it.
And it's sad to record that so few persons take delight in cultivating, being able to be more aware, right? I mean, that's why it's so sad. It's sad that people, you know, are choosing to not be able to experience beauty, truth, and goodness more. Okay. All right. So, that's why they were saying, see, but and Gerasim is but the first step on the way to the supernal perfection of paradise beauty. Right? Paradise beauty. That's the source of beauty, the Isle of Paradise. And every step you go up, more and more of the aisle is there with the energy system that you're experiencing. More and more of the pattern of the aisle is coming through. All right, let's get into the circles here a little bit.
Five, the Gerasim circles. The residential reservations assigned to the major groups of universe life are designated the Gerasim circles. Those circle groups which find mention in these narratives are the following. 1. The circles of the sons of God. 2. The circles of the angels and higher spirits. 3. The circles of the universe aides, including the creature trinitized sons not assigned to the Trinity teacher sons. 4. The circles of the master physical controllers. 5. The circles of the assigned ascending mortals, including the midway creatures. 6. The circles of the courtesy colonies. 7. The circles of the core of the finality.
Let's see, maybe just pause there for 1 second. Mention a couple issues there. Notice the little parenthetical they threw in, including the creature trinitized sons not assigned to the Trinity teacher sons, as you'll see in a minute. Right, I mean, some of the sons of God that they're talking about in item number 1 there are the Trinity teacher sons. Okay, see, so some of those creature trinitized sons are involved in the circles of type number 1 there. Okay, now there's in type number 3. And then, you know, notice again, those circle groups which find mention in these narratives. Okay, so, you know, we're reminded again that they've given us this subset of everything in the universe of universes, a very cleverly crafted subset where we have the lowest order sevenfold subset. Who knows how many different types of circles there are. But we've been given a subset, and in order for it to be a self-consistently complete picture that they're giving us, there has to be 7 in that minimum subset, like we've seen a million times. Right? Over and over again, they've given us this subset of things. And so who knows how many different ones of these circles there are. It's a very, very big world. You have 10,000 times, right, the surface area again. That whole bit about there's more order, you know, types of beings, children of the infinite spirit, than you can even imagine, let alone the numbers of beings themselves. So, even down Gerasim, there's probably a lot of these circles. Who knows how many? A lot more than seven. All right.
Each of these residential groupings consists of seven concentric and successively elevated circles. They are all constructed along the same lines, but are of different sizes and are fashioned of differing materials. They are all surrounded by far-reaching enclosures, which mount up to form extensive promenades, entirely encompassing every group of seven concentric circles.
Okay, before we, I mean, when you keep reading, they'll give you some more details so that you can sort this out, but let me just put some of it up front. Okay, so we're looking for some land to build and work on, okay? So that's the first thought you want to have. You want to picture a tract of land. These tracts of land are rings, okay? You know, so just, you know, if you take two circles, you know, the space that's between, you know, two concentric circles, you know, that ring shape, okay? So you've got seven rings of horizontal surface. You know, whether or not there's actual dirt on that surface or you know, it's all tiled or, you know, whatever, I mean, is beside the point.
They're but, like pit mines, are they?
No, but you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a degree of terraced. Okay, it's a terraced structure. Okay? Okay, so you have seven rings that you've put together concentrically in a terraced structure. So there's a central region that's the lowest elevation, better than altitude, right? It's because it's actual terra firma that you can stand on. Okay, so you got the central region that's sort of at ground level of Gerasim, okay? And then around that is a ring that's higher. And around that is a ring that's higher yet, okay? In elevation, they keep going up in elevation. Okay, and the way it's structured is, if you have a given ring, around the outer perimeter of that ring of horizontal surface is a wall. Okay, so you have the horizontal surface, and then there's a vertical surface, a wall, the outer boundary of that ring of land that goes up, probably quite a long ways, up to the next level, the next ring around. Okay, so you're going up and out in this gigantic terraced structure. Okay, and when they talk about a promenade, okay, so if you think about a given ring of land, on the outer perimeter is a wall. On the inner perimeter of that particular ring of horizontal surface is an avenue, a promenade. Okay? You can walk, you know, you can stroll around the inner perimeter of that ring of land and look down upon everything that's at a lower elevation inside of you. Okay? And that goes all the way to what they're describing here, to the outermost ring of horizontal surface, that's seventh one. It has a promenade going all the way around it. It's like, well, how does this work? So they say it mounts up. So you think about the normal elevation of Gerasim, the basic elevation of the land of Gerasim. As you approach one of these giant terraced circular structures, okay, that ground begins to mount up from its sea level, you know, quote-unquote elevation. You know, it begins to mount up in some gradual way till it gets all the way up to that that elevation of that outermost ring. Okay, so you've got this terrace structure with some sort of a sloping, gentle, you know, tapering off on the outside down to normal ground level. Okay, and as we read a little bit here, you know, these are gigantic. Okay, at least some of them are really gigantic. Okay, So we're talking about, you know, just imagine this berm of land all the way around. We're talking about a lot of dirt, okay? To make this mounting up slope that's coming up from the normal level of the land up all the way up to the top of this terraced structure. Okay? And you can see, you know, I'm being very crude. I mean, it's not, you know, don't think of it as a giant earthen terrace, you know, in South America or something, or, you know, Indonesia or whatever. I mean, they're fashioned out of all kinds of materials beyond our wildest imaginations, you know, including the, you know, the sloping area that's outside of the circles proper. Who knows what it's all made out of? I'm sure it's not just, you know, loamy soil piled up. Okay, let's see, what else do we have in there? Let's see. But you don't, you know, even though they say that they're different sizes, you notice in general they say far-reaching enclosures. So even the smallest ones are apparently very, very big. Because there's a lot of beings.
You're not going to cruise the promenade in an afternoon.
No. 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 Especially once we read a little bit, you'll see how you won't do it in an afternoon. Okay, so even the smallest ones are obviously very, very big. Let's see. Okay, yeah. So then let's get... So they in the process of going through the seven, especially in the very first one here, they give you some more of the details. And then you just... They don't repeat that. You just, you know, all of them are built basically like that. Okay, so let's see what they say about the first one here.
One, circles of the sons of God. Though the sons of God possess a social planet of their own, one of the transitional culture worlds, they also occupy these extensive domains on Gerasim. On their transitional culture world, the ascending mortals freely mingle with all orders of divine sonship. There you will personally know and love these sons, but their social life is largely confined to this special world and its satellites. In the Gerasim circles, however, these various groups of sonship may be observed at work, and since Marantia vision is of enormous range, you can walk about on the sun's promenades and overlook the intriguing activities of their numerous orders.
All right. So, first of all, and it's true of many of these residences that we're going to be talking about now, you know, like back there in, let's see, what paper was that? That's paper 45, I guess the previous paper. Remember, we went through the list of the seven primary satellites of Gerasim. So the world of the suns is world number 5, you know, and you had the angelic world was world number 3, super angel world number 4, you know, and you know, they were just mentioning those various beings in this list. So, you know, in many cases, you know, there's a finaliter's world, talk about finaliter. So in many cases, these beings that have these quote-unquote residences also have a world. And it's 7 sub-satellites that they oversee. Those primary satellites and their sub-satellites, remember you can go visit those and all that sort of stuff, you know, as you're going through the Imagine Worlds. You can socialize with all these various beings on those worlds. But these residences, quote-unquote, this is where they're working. Okay? So in general, we're not talking about social spaces. You've got whole worlds for that. You're talking about the places where they're working. And so as you're strolling these promenades, you're looking down upon the activity of these beings doing whatever it is that they're up to. Like if they're Lenanadex, they're up to doing the whole system, sovereign, planetary, prince, you know, whatnot sort of stuff. All the things involved in, you know, in functioning as a Lenanadex. All right, so that's the basic difference that's going on there between those transitional cultural worlds and these circles. Let's see, what else do we have here? Let's see. Like they mentioned, we're ascending mortals freely mingle, you know, with those orders of divine sonship. There's the social spaces. The social life is confined there mostly. Let's see, what else do we have there? And then this is that last bit. Okay, so remember again, these things are super, super vast, but you can still stroll the promenade, even, the outermost one, and see great, great distance, because you aren't doing the simple little photon interacting with eyeball kind of seeing, right? You are just reaching out in the mind energy system and doing what we crudely call remote viewing. You'll just call it seeing there. Right? You have the ability to be aware of a very large domain in the same way that you're aware of this room through this crude sensory mechanism we call sight. And you'll just be able to quote unquote see, hear, whatnot, the goings on for a vast distance by just moving your consciousness to that location in the mind energy system. The mind energy system fills all space. And the higher the being you are, the more you can navigate like this and be aware at great distances from your actual physical location or your personal location. Okay, so they wanted to remind you that up front, because as you keep reading, it's all going to seem pretty ridiculous from our perspective, that you would be seeing anything from these promenades. I think we got everything. I keep going here.
These seven circles of the suns are concentric and successively elevated so that each of the outer and larger circles overlooks the inner and smaller ones, each being surrounded by a public promenade wall. These walls are constructed of crystal gems of gleaming brightness and are so elevated as to overlook all of their respective residential circles. The many gates, from 50 to 150,000, which penetrate each of these walls, consist of single pearly crystals.
Okay, so you can see I already basically described the successively elevated. Each one overlooks, the inner ones. I think we got all that. The fact that you've got a wall. Now, here you can see the walls are constructed of crystal gems. Okay, so not just crystalline material, but crystal gems. Now, it's cut crystal. Okay? So they've taken crystalline material, gemstones, right, and fashioned it into elaborate faceted materials of some indescribable nature. And then sure enough, they point out in passing that in the midst of all of the human alteration of the Book of Revelation, you've got some genuine vision that John had, and there are pearly gates. Okay? You don't have just 12 pearly gates like you do in the Book of Revelation. Right? You've got from 50 to 150,000 in each wall. Okay, so just right there, even though they haven't given you a sense of how big these things might be, if the smallest number is 50,000 gates, that's going to take a pretty big ring to put 50,000 doors in it. Yeah, not to mention 150,000 doors. Okay, so it's sounding like they're pretty big. And even the fact that, in Revelation, it says that these gates were a single pearl. Notice, they've validated that. But it's not a pearl. It's a pearly crystal. Right, so there is that modification. But obviously John, couldn't have, distinguished between something, a pearly crystal, and a pearl. But so he managed to get something pretty definitive there. including the fact that he recognized it wasn't some sort of a composite thing, but it was a single monolithic object, those gates, those doors. So that's pretty cool. All right, keep going.
The first circle of the domain of the sons is occupied by the magisterial sons and their personal staffs. Here center all the plans and immediate activities of the bestowal and adjudicational services of these juridical sons. It is also through this center that the avonals of the system maintain contact with the universe.
Okay, so now just think about the logic that that the smallest ring of space for building buildings on and whatnot, doing things on, is the magisterial sons. They don't have as vast an activity as, say, Melchizedek sons. You know, there's only so many worlds in a local system. You know, and now they need bestowal sons and magisterial sons and what have you. But not surprisingly, that they have the smallest of the seven. So you just notice that. And they point out that they've got, separate from that communication stuff we talked about before with the receiving station around the sea of glass and all that sort of stuff, you notice they maintain contact with the universe right there. So they've got their own wires, quote unquote, to the cosmos. That
Wi-Fi.
How exactly they, what exactly this is and whatnot, we don't know. But just notice that if a group of beings needs to have their a connectivity independent of sort of like the connectivity of the masses around the sea of glass, they have it. Okay. Because remember, there's all kinds of secret channels, of communication in the universe of universes and a lot of stuff that the public doesn't have access to. So you can see that, and they're not obviously not going to tell you, but probably a lot of these have this sort of connectivity. Right. Okay.
The second circle is occupied by the Trinity Teacher Sons. In this sacred domain, the Danels and their associates carry forward the training of the newly arrived primary teacher sons. And in all of this work, they are ably assisted by a division of certain coordinates of the brilliant evening stars. The creature trinitized sons occupy a sector of the Danel circle. The Trinity Teacher Sons come the nearest to being the personal representatives of the Universal Father in a local system. They are at least Trinity origin beings. This second circle is a domain of extraordinary interest to all the peoples of Jerison.
Okay, so a little bit bigger space for the activity of the Trinity Teacher Sons. Don't be confused when they say primary teacher sons there. It's not like there's primary, secondary, and tertiary. Say Trinity Teacher Sons. They just mean you have the teacher sons and their associates, and it's like, well, who's in charge here? Who's the primary beings? The teacher sons are the primary beings. So that's why it's their circle. Okay? They're not just one of many others, and it's equally those others' circle. It's their circle. Okay, they threw us a little bone. They keep referring to these unrevealed associates of the Trinity, of the brilliant evening stars. So they're up to something here. And we still don't know exactly what we're supposed to think about them, but I keep pointing out over and over and over and over again, they refer to them in passing.
At least we've got their address.
All right, so we have their address to a degree here, yes. There's at least a division of certain coordinates of the brilliant evening stars that are here. Here's some of those creature trinitized suns. And, remember the thing about the magisterial suns come from the eternal sun and the infinite spirit? Right, so there's no immediate father-likeness. That's the whole point. The Trinity Teacher Sons, okay, they aren't technically coming from the Father, the Son, or the Spirit. They're coming from the Paradise Trinity. But, you know, they're saying, you know, like they do there, at least they are at least Trinity origin beings. So in a homogenized way, there's some more relationship to the Father than there is in the magisterial sons. And remember how they categorize those Trinity teacher sons with the creator sons and the magisterial sons, because there's something that's a little bit more father to son-like to their son nature than, say, the stationary sons of the Trinity, like divine counselors. Okay, so in ways we don't really understand, but they're referring to that they, they're the nearest to being the personal representatives of the universal father in the local system. Okay, this second circle is a domain of extraordinary interest to all the peoples of Gerizim. You know, everyone is very interested in what these high teachers are teaching, you know, how, what kind of an influence they're imposing upon everything. Everyone's trying to guess where the local system's going, you know, and they're looking at this teaching that's come down from on high. They're very curious about this, trying to speculate what this is slowly leading us all towards. Okay. There was a question somewhere. Was it? Oh, yeah.
Refer to these as a sacred domain. They mm-hmm. don't refer to the others, and that maybe is keying in on what you just said.
Yeah.
Because sacred's a little bit different than.
Right.
So there must be something more, or something that way about this.
Yeah, they'll use that word sacred if they want to just give you a sense of there's a sublime transcendence to what's going on there. It's not so immediate, you know, day to day, you know, figuring out how to keep the plumbing going on Gerizim, you know, sort of activity, you know, and hence it's sacred. Okay. You know, in the same way, remember we saw and noticed when they used the word temple to indicate a domain. Right? So they're just trying to, you know, use words like that to suggest there's a bit of poetry to this. It's not so prosaic. You know, there's something transcendent, something about the future that's going on there, not so much just about the present. Okay. All right.
The third circle is devoted to the Melchizedeks. Here the system chiefs reside and supervise the almost endless activities of these versatile sons. From the first of the mansion worlds on through all the Gerizim career of ascending mortals, the Melchizedeks are foster fathers and ever-present advisors. It would not be amiss to say that they are the dominant influence on Gerizim, aside from the ever-present activities of the material sons and daughters.
Right, the fact that they're in charge of Melchizedek University and they bring that teaching all the way down from Salvington, you know, that's the dominant influence. So much of what the universe is about is learning, right? We're all, through learning, evolving, being evolved towards light and life, right? So, very dominant influence. You know, and like they mentioned, you know, aside from the ever-present activities of the material sons and daughters. And that came up, I think maybe that was last time, you know, wondering about the material sons and daughters. Are they basically just in this central region where all these circles are, you know, that sector, or are they all over the place? No, see, ever-present activities, right? I mean, they're working on all of the sub-satellites and the satellites. They're all over the place doing stuff. Okay, but their residence, you know, their home, and one of the big things they do is being about home life, right? That's happening in this central region. I mean, they're not doing the home life thing, you know, on the third sub-satellite of the second major satellite, right? They're doing whatever, you know, that needs to be done there. Their estates, where their family is a family, is, you know, in the middle of all these circles. Okay?
The fourth circle is the home of the Verandadeks and all other orders of the visiting and observer sons who are not otherwise provided for. The Most High Constellation Fathers take up their abode in this circle when on visits of inspection to the local system. Perfectors of wisdom, divine counselors, and universal censors all reside in this circle when on duty in the system.
Okay, so I mentioned, the stationary sons of the Trinity. Right, so the perfectors of wisdom, divine counselors, universal censors, they would take up residence here in this circle. And notice, it's Voronezh. It's like, well, the Voronezh thing is not going to be a gigantic phenomenon. Why would they need to be in the fourth circle, this really big one, relatively speaking? And all other orders of visiting and observing suns. Remember, there's all kinds of unrevealed orders of suns. So it's not just the Voronezh. It's most of what's going on in this circle is they haven't revealed. It involves beings that we don't even know about. So it's a very big space relative to even what the Melchizedeks are up to. Okay. All right.
The fifth circle is the abode of the Lanonandeks, the sonship order of the system sovereigns and the planetary princes. The three groups mingle as one when at home in this domain. The system reserves are held in this circle, while the system sovereign has a temple situated at the center of the governing group of structures on Administration Hill.
Okay, so all the direct Lanonadec stuff, and they say, the three groups, in other words, the primary, the secondary, and the tertiary Lanonadecs, all mingle as one. They aren't so much those three, separateness there, that threefold separateness there. And, you have finally some indication of, these aren't just flat surface. I mean, there's all kinds of structures and whatnot built upon these, each of these rings. So here you see not only mention of a structure, the temple of the system sovereign, but there's actually some relief in the terrain. They aren't all built on a flat surface. Here they're mentioning there's a hill. Okay, so somewhere on this vast ring, there's a hill, and at the top of the hill, there's the temple of the system sovereign. Okay, so, and I'm sure exactly at what point around the ring is very important where this hill is, and who knows what the geometry of all that is, but, and definitely, imagine yourself if you were standing in the middle of one of these rings, right now as you are, you couldn't see the wall or the promenade. I mean, these are gigantic. It's not like you're in a tightly terraced, hillside or something. I mean, this is gigantic, right? You could see curvature of the earth, on this scale, okay? I mean, these are huge, okay? Huge domains.
What are we supposed to do on the promenade? Good grief.
Yep.
So, do you think the system sovereign hill here is on the fourth one because it's in the middle? Three below?
No, it's on the fifth.
Oh, is it the fifth?
Yeah, see, it's the fifth circle. Hmm. All right, see, I'm not trying to speculate. I mean, see, obviously, you could get into all the.
But that's where Lucifer would have lived, right?
That's his system sovereign. That's where his headquarters was. And right? And so. For the 2 years of the rebellion on Gerasim, this would have been an interesting circle. This would be the center of a lot of interesting activity. But that's, that one maybe kind of catches you off guard. Initially, you're thinking, well, there's probably some special spot somewhere on the planet, a very central spot, where there's the system sovereign's headquarters. No, it's just on one of the circles, one of the rings, right? Because there's a whole lot of activity that's just as important as what the Lanonadecs are up to, right?
Would he have had the insight to be able to see distances and?
Wait, who? What? What?
Would the system sovereign be able to see? Sure. Distances and the
yeah.
Here and
yeah. All that. The all the beings have this extended vision ability. Yeah, yeah, and so I mean, that's one reason why you can think of, well, you know, why would the Nonodex, you know, be after the Melchizedeks and the Trinity Teacher's Sons and Ronan? Well, I mean, they are the ones that are in charge of the local system level, so their domain oversees all of those other sons. But it is interesting to note who's above them. See? I mean, they may be above all of these sons we've read about, and appropriately at the local system level, but who's got the sixth and seventh tiers here? Who didn't join the rebellion when Lucifer rebelled? Who might have a higher vantage point than even a system sovereign and could be immune to his sophistries? Someone at a higher vantage point, someone at a higher level. So you literally see it. They literally, you know, these senders are at a higher vantage point.
Maybe it's because nobody wants to look down at us.
No, they do. They are very, very fascinated by what we're up to.
Okay.
Just note that. See, you know, there's nothing, it's going to be nothing arbitrary. There's going to be truth flowing through this structure. The truth of the relationships between all these beings relative to eternity, remember, relative to the pattern world in the eternal universe, central universe, right? It's being expressed here. The relationship to eternity is much more immediate than what meets the eye, right? You know, and you're saying, it's like, well, I'm just a lowly ascender, and he's the system sovereign. Well, the circle says otherwise.
It mentions all the gates. It doesn't talk about staircases.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that in just a minute.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
Are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
The sixth circle is the tarrying place of the system life carriers. All orders of these sons are here assembled, and from here they go forth on their world assignments.
Okay, is that greater integrity of the life carriers, you know, to not fall into rebellion, because that would be really problematic, you know, with the job they have? Now to see they're at a higher tier. Okay? You know, so who's the lower son? You know, are life carriers really lower than Lenonadex? When you think Melchizedek, Verondadek, Lenonadek, life carrier, you know, depends on what you're thinking about. Right here you see they occupy a higher tier. Okay, let's see. Yeah, so, I mean, just the fact that this is a very big ring, there's a lot of details. Life carriers have a lot of details they're dealing with. All of the details of all the life on all the worlds. It takes a lot of space to handle all those details. Even more space than the Lenonadex overseeing things. Okay.
The seventh circle is the rendezvous of the ascending sons, those assigned mortals who may be temporarily functioning on the system headquarters, together with their seraphic consorts. All ex-mortals above the status of Gerasim citizens and below that of Finaliters are reckoned as belonging to the group having its headquarters in this circle.
Okay. Yes. So you can see this. These ascending sons. Okay, they're not. They're not the ones that are just coming up. You know, above the status of Gerasim citizens, even, and below the level of Finaliters. Okay, but mere ascending sons stand at the highest level in this whole pecking order of sons. That's saying something. You know, what kind of integrity you have when you leave Gerasim. We talked about that last session. Just note that right there. Some very definitive integrity in a mortal, even one that's just left Gerasim, that they have the highest tier here. All right, and of course, you know, I mean, you've got your guardian angels, you know, that are with you, so, you know, they're seraphic consorts. Let's see here. So it's just the ones that are temporarily functioning there. Now, you'll see there's other places for the other ascending mortals when we, you know, get to other circles. All right, let's read this next thing here.
These circular reservations of the suns occupy an enormous area, and until 1900 years ago, there existed a great open space at its center. This central region is now occupied by the Michael Memorial, completed some 500 years ago. 495 years ago, when this temple was dedicated, Michael was present in person, and all Gerizim heard the touching story of the Master Sun's bestowal on Urantia, the least of Satania. The Michael Memorial is now the center of all activities embraced in the modified management of the system occasioned by Michael's bestowal, including most of the more recently transplanted Salvington activities. The memorial staff consists of over 1 million personalities.
Okay. So even that smallest little region, she's obviously pretty big, inside the first circle. Okay, now that we've done all, so the, you know, there technically are 8 levels, see? You know, there's that center region is a sort of the zeroth circle in all of these. And so, you know, you're thinking about, okay, you read through all this, and it's like, well, what if I want to go here? You know, what if I want to get to this Michael Memorial? Do I walk up the long bank up to that, you know, and then, I don't know, like, do I climb down a ladder on the first wall and then scamper across a vast, you know, I mean how in the heck, you know, so, you know, remember there's these gates in the walls that surround all these. So you're just thinking, oh, so in other words, you know, you go to the wall, outer perimeter of one of these circles and through a gate, and there must be a tunnel, see, that goes horizontally all the way out to that long sloping embankment. So, you know, if you wanted to get the Michael Memorial and you're coming from outside, there must be a lowest ring of gates around the outside, and you go through some tunnel. You probably, you know, have some sort of conveyance. You don't have to walk. Some conveyance that takes you horizontally through a tunnel to that gate on the very inside and into the Michael Memorial. You know, so the Monadnecks go to work, you know, by coming in through these, you know, conduits of some sort that are coming in horizontally into these walls. That's why you don't see stairs or anything like that. So that would be your best first guess of how this is constructed, how you access it. Now, just a couple things to note there. I mean, 495 years ago, when this temple was dedicated, Michael was present in person on Gerizim. So in 1439, right, the year 1439, Michael was pretty close to here. He was on Gerizim. It's kind of an interesting thing to think about, that people back in 1439, little did they know how close it was to a second coming, that he was over on Gerizim. And those from Urantia that were there on Gerizim, like whom?
John the Baptist.
Would have gotten to see Michael again, right? In 1439. Right? So,
what are the Salvington things they talk about?
So that comes up a little bit when we get up here a little ways. But remember how there's a whole bunch of things that have been transferred from Salvington to the local system, and even to our world. You know, the Archangel Divisional Headquarters, right? That's something that's transferred from Salvington. Yeah, so there's all these central regions in these circles become the places where some of this stuff has been transferred to from Salvington.
This is more of the least shall be first or something.
Yeah, right, that whole bit about the first shall be last and the last shall be first, yeah. Yeah, the least, you know, the local system has got local universe headquarters stuff. But it's at the very center, see, so, you know, it indicates it's transcendence, that it's, these things take up residence in the very center of these vast circles of activity. Okay, so that's kind of fun. The fact that there's Yeah, think about how long this circle was in existence before there was a Michael Memorial there.
Right? Conspicuously empty.
Yeah. Everyone is, you know, think about how many billions of years everyone was speculating on what would get built in this unbuilt location.
So you think he knew then?
Well, no, I mean, it's just a reminder that what he, you know, what he did fits into a pre-existent pattern, right? It's not like when he does something that seems really out of the norm, doesn't fit into the central universe pattern at all. It's a complete non sequitur. I mean, we've got to build a whole, no, coincidentally, there is a place exactly where that fits in.
We think there'd be a place at every local system headquarters? Good question.
Yeah, right. See, just all, you know, like they said, and the circles are not circles on a different, in a different local universe. All these things change, but when all is said and done, everything that a Michael does is fitting into a particular Hovona world's pattern. And so there will be a physical place to memorialize or locate that industry or whatever. It all fits in naturally. You can only go in one place. All right, we should have just enough time here to do circles of the angels here.
To the circles of the angels. Like the residential area of the suns, these circles of the angels consist of seven concentric and successively elevated circles, each overlooking the inner areas. The first circle of the angels is occupied by the higher personalities of the infinite spirit, who may be stationed on the headquarters world, solitary messengers and their associates. The second circle is dedicated to the messenger hosts, technical advisors, companions, inspectors, and recorders, as they may chance to function on Gerasim from time to time. The third circle is held by the ministering spirits of the higher orders and groupings.
So you just, you know, hearken back to those earlier papers in the book. You see how they're just going in order from the higher personalities to the messenger hosts of space, you know, to the Supernafem and Sakanafem. So where are the executioners of the Ancients of Days? Where do they reside? You now know their address. If you want to go look up the executioners, they are... The second circle is dedicated to the messenger hosts, right? Those are part of the messenger hosts. All right, so that's their address. The executioners of the Ancients of Days. So you're going... Well, do you suppose if they're going to do that deed, do they do it there? This is where they work. That's their job. I mean, I don't know.
Do you get a summons to that circle? Are you a little worried?
Are there these little black radial patches occasionally on that where someone went poof?
Clean up circle three. Yeah. Instructions: do not deliver any messages.
Oh no, I have an appointment on the second circle.
Ah! In case I don't get back, tidy up my affairs a little.
Guard in Seraphim. I wanted to make sure, you know, I mean, see, they're expecting you to just, you know, remember all the details, and they rattle them off like this. I wanted to try to, you know, that's one of the things that's going on there, those conciliating commissions.
I appreciate that,
okay. You know, it all sounds so boilerplate when you talk about technical advisors, companions, inspectors, you know. You know, they're just giving you general terms. If you go back and look at the messenger host of space, you'll see what they're talking about. All right, yeah, keep going.
The fourth circle is held by the administrator seraphim. And that looks like a really funny word, the administrator seraphim. And the seraphim serving in a local system like Satania are an innumerable host of angels. The fifth circle is occupied by the planetary seraphim, while the sixth is the home of the transition ministers. The seventh circle is the tarrying sphere of certain unrevealed orders of seraphim. The recorders of all these groups of angels do not sojourn with their fellows, being domiciled in the Gerasim Temple of Records. All records are preserved in triplicate In this threefold hall of archives, on a system headquarters, records are always preserved in material in Marantia and in spirit form.
Okay, you see how they're not giving us a lot of detail. They're rattling through these circles pretty fast. Okay, so they start out with the fourth circle, the seraphim serving in the local in a local system like Satania are, quote, an innumerable host of angels. They never miss an opportunity to take a phrase or a passage from the Bible and use it in context. They're drawing from the book of Hebrews there. There's a little passage that refers to the heavenly Jerusalem. You know, and they're reminding you, that's where you are right now. You are at, you know, you're on the quote-unquote heavenly Jerusalem. That's why they call it Gerasim. And, you know, and so they're saying, yeah, there's a truth to that statement about that innumerable host of angels. This is the fourth circle. This is a very large area of residential, you know, residential spaces. And so they're just giving you that. They can't resist the opportunity to show you a thread of truth that flows through some seemingly random Bible passage. Okay, and then you remember how you have the, when we went through the seraphim, you have the seven different orders that we went through? Okay, and they're moving along in that sequence. You have the administrator seraphim that work at the local system. And if you go back and look, you know, you'll see that the next ones are the planetary seraphim. And then the next ones after that are the transition ministers. So you see that that order of those orders of angels that they gave you is being duplicated here. The circle, you know, they reside in that same order, going from in to out. And then the seventh circle, okay, they say it's the tearing space of certain unrevealed orders of seraphim. Okay, that's not that seventh group of seraphim that they talked about back there. If you go back and look, you'll see that isn't, you know, that's not what they're talking about. It's also not, remember how there's those six other types of unrevealed angels because there's the six other schemes besides the ascension scheme? You think, oh, maybe they're talking about them. No, because they tell you right back there that those unrevealed types of angels are never called seraphim. This is unrevealed orders of seraphim. Oh, so there's more than seven orders of seraphim. They didn't even mention that till here. Okay, so again, you see they gave us a subset, a sevenfold subset. You know, and so you can wonder, it's like, well, how many orders of seraphim are there? Are there 12 orders? Are there, you know, how many unrevealed orders are there? Don't know. But however many there are, they occupy the seventh circle. Well, that's the biggest circle. So there probably are a lot of these unrevealed orders of angels, right? You know, that's telling you something. How much is revealed and how much isn't? You know, the amount that's unrevealed is much greater than what's revealed. The unrevealed part occupies the biggest area. Right? The fifth epical revelation is a very limited revelation.
Fleeting glimpse.
Just a fleeting glimpse. Just a little thin cross-section of the big picture. It is a complete cross-section. That's the sevenfoldness that we keep seeing. But it's a very thin cross-section. All right. Then they throw in that little thing that, you know, remember how all the different types, you know, all have recorders. Yeah, but see, all those recorder angels, they're in a different place. So that's a little complexity to throw in. That whole bit of record keeping, that's a separate activity that doesn't conform with the activities within this vast circle of the circles of the angels.
To those of us of a certain age, triplicate implies carbon paper.
Yeah, and that's why they use that analogy for us, carbon copies, right? But again, you know, remember what I said about the pattern universe thing. You know, you see it here again. That it's not done in triplicate here because, well, you're down at this really lowly level and you can't just have the spirit records. You got to have it for the lowly material beings. No. In the central universe, material, morontal, spiritual. And this is the most direct expression of that threefoldness here at the local system level. So they're reminding you of that again. Okay, well, how big are the circles of the angels? Let's see.
These seven circles are surrounded by the exhibit panorama of Gerasim, 5,000 standard miles in circumference, which is devoted to the presentation of the advancing status of the peopled worlds of Satania and is constantly revised so as to truly represent up-to-date conditions on the individual planets. I do not doubt that this vast promenade overlooking the circles of the angels will be the first sight of Gerasim to claim your attention when you are permitted extended leisure on your earlier visits.
Okay, so the promenade that surrounds this whole thing has this very intriguing, vast presentation of the worlds. But look at the size here, okay? So the circumference is 5,000 standard miles. I remember a standard Gerasim mile is 7 of our miles, okay? 35,000 standard miles, of our miles, 35,000 miles in circumference. Okay, the circumference of the Earth is just under 25,000 miles, 24,900 miles. This is much, much bigger than the Earth, you know, like 40% bigger, right?
Yeah, we could fit inside it.
Right. You plop the Earth in, you know, and it's not going to cast a shadow on the seventh circle here, right? Okay? These are huge. Okay? You know, again, it reminds you that you've got a surface area that's 10,000 times the surface area of the Earth. So you can build structures that are even bigger than the diameter of the Earth, you know, and it's just, well, there's that thing over there, you know. You know, it's a long journey to it, right? Yeah.
I'm afraid I'm lost.
Yep.
We discussed the levels starting, you know, all the way up through the various orders of being, and where then the ascending mortals are on the top. Correct.
No. We're in the circles of the angels now.
A whole different set of
circles. That's what I was going to ask.
We're in a totally different set of circles.
Okay.
Right. I mean, the suns is the previous one.
Okay.
There's seven levels of the suns.
This is a
whole other one. I mean, so, you know, they're going to give us seven of these circles.
That's his point. There's a lot of Earth diameters in here.
Right, I mean, and this one is a lot bigger than our planet. I mean, you know, so I mean, you got seven of these things, and that's only the seven they revealed. Right, I mean, each of these are gigantic. You know, it's like a whole Earth unto itself from our perspective,
seven
just for the angels.
Circular.
There's much more than the seven, but they're just going to talk about seven of these giant seven-tiered structures.
Seven of seven, Don.
Each of them has seven levels.
Circles.
But we're seven of these big things.
Somehow I didn't catch the transition here.
Right.
Just keeping up.
Right. This is the separate sevenfold circle of the angels.
I was going to say already it's getting a little crowded.
Okay. No, it's number two. And so, you know, when the innumerable host of angels.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I mean, just think about how much area there is here we're talking about. We're talking about a vast amount of area.
It makes me think that there's going to be so many things we're never going to be bored or never. There'll be so many new things all the time, something else to go experience.
Yeah, and again, remember, they're purposely calling these promenades or promenades, whichever way you like to say it, because, you know, the literalness of that word, you know, it's an avenue for walking, you know, not for going in a bullet train, okay? You know, so they have, you know, imagine walking 35,000 miles around this thing.
What are you talking about? I don't understand that at all.
And you're going to want to walk all 35,000 miles because all the way around the outer margin of that walkway is this incredible display that you're going to want to study every little detail of. Think how long it's going to take you to to walk this.
Extended.
Yeah. So one time in the air, you go a little bit, you know. Next time you're there, you pick. Yeah. And that's just one of these things, right?
They might have
never get off Jerusalem.
Segways, yeah. but like I'm saying, you know, they very purposely are using that word promenade because they want you to, you know, this is not, you know, it's not a rail line, you know, that's you're looking out the window and I think I saw Earth pass, you know, Urantia pass by, you know.
Yeah.
Right? No, this is meant for a leisurely domain. Yeah? Okay? And it's gigantic. Okay. So, you know, when they said up front, far-reaching enclosures, they meant far-reaching enclosures. Okay.
These exhibits are in charge of the native life of Jerusalem, but they are assisted by the ascenders from the various Satania worlds who are tarrying on Jerusalem en route to Adentia. The portrayal of planetary conditions and world progress is affected by many methods, some known to you, but mostly by techniques unknown on Urantia. These exhibits occupy the outer edge of this vast wall. The remainder of the promenade is almost entirely open, being highly and magnificently embellished.
Right. See, so you have the wall on the out, you know, the outer part of the seventh ring, and you're up on top of that wall, right, for the promenade. You know, and it's a very, you know, vast radial area. See, and around the whole outer region is all these displays, and then, you know, the actual strolling area is in the inner margins of it. Okay, and these, you know, notice how, you know, you will be involved in these, you know, as an ascending mortal there on Jerusalem, you know, who are tearing on Jerusalem en route to Adentia, you know, are putting in, getting, you know, giving input into this. They're using all kinds of display methods, you know, that we can't even imagine. They aren't just, you know, painting stuff on a wall, you know, graffiti-like or something. And then, you know, and then they end there, and it's like, well, wait a minute. Before they ended on the previous one, they told us what was in the very center. They haven't told us what's in the very center. We've got the seven areas, but what's in the very center of the angels? They already told us that a while ago, remember? So this vast thing that's bigger than the Earth, with all these seven tiers, what's down in the very middle? What's down in the zeroth circle at the center of all this? Do you remember? The 24 counselors. The domain of the 24 counselors. So, you know, when you go to before the 24 counselors to get, you know, assessed for something or whatnot, you're in the center of this gigantic thing, see, where everyone is overlooking you.
Yeah.
No pressure.
Don't be nervous.
All right. But again, you know, that, so if you think about John being given that vision that you have there, you know, of seeing the 24 counselors, even though it's corrupted and whatnot. See, he was seeing at the center of this vast structure. Imagine how just incomprehensible this would be to poor little fisherman John, right? Something that's bigger than the Earth, you know, and he's giving a vision of this, and right. Right. So, I mean, he was obviously very overwhelmed, and, you know, it's amazing that he managed to get us anything that was remotely related to what was actually there.
Are the 24 in the middle of the first circles?
Second.
Yeah, so you have the first circle, right?
No, the first set.
Set.
No, that's the Michael.
No, okay.
Michael no.
So the 24 in the second set.
Yeah.
The circles of the angels.
Right, you have the circles of the suns. The Michael Memorial is at the center of that one.
Okay.
This is the seven circles of the angels. The center of those.
So far, we have been presented with two sets of seven. And there are
there's seven they're going to tell us about, and we don't know how many more there are besides the seven.
Yeah,
Very, very big building projects. Okay. Yeah, so, you know, if you just look back here at the beginning of the 420 count.
You got transportation.
No, it's promenade. You're supposed to walk.
Come on, guys. back here in the 420 counselors, see, it said at the center of the seven angelic residential circles on Gerizim is located the headquarters of the Urantia Advisory Council, the 420 counselors.
Thank you.
Right. Right. So now you know where that is. You might have just been thinking, oh, you go to this kind of little temple place or something, you know, and here's a throne, and it's like, no, it's in the midst of this gigantic structure down there at the center.
Near the strip wall, just
okay. And who is immediately overlooking the 420 counselors? It's the, it's the solitary messengers and whatnot. They're in that first circle. Okay, and goes up from there. Okay, so anyway, just, let yourself, go back and read this over and over again a few times and start to kind of get a feeling for how this all lays out. It'll help you to systematize all this stuff that we've been reading for so many papers, to kind of have it all organized into a single location instead of, there's solitary messengers and I don't know where they are. And whatnot. See, it allows you to have kind of a simple little pigeonhole to put all these beings in to get them ordered in your head a little bit. To think about them as in these seven circles and, help you keep track of them in your mind.
Many of these orders of beings have their own spheres as well.
Right. And like I said, the angels, have their own set of spheres too. And, one of the primary satellites
and
around Gerizim.
These places are just like weekend getaways or something?
No, those are the spheres of the social agents. This is where they're working. The angels are doing all their work here. In these vast domains. So, do the angels have a lot of work to do? Yes. Their workspace is bigger than our planet. Just to not have enough workbenches. Right? You need something vastly bigger than our planet. They have a lot of work to do. Very busy beings.
Okay. And where are we going to be taking all our classes? In our residence?
We'll get to the education stuff. You could see you had the Trinity Teacher Sons, obviously their work is teaching, you saw that.
Melchizedek's too.
Right, there's, but yeah. They'll talk about that as we get into the other circles a little bit more here. Okay, but anyway, that's the, if these things have never sunk in, I hope they're starting to sink in a little bit better, just what we're talking about here.
These used to be my favorite papers. I don't think I ever read the damn
thing. These are quite impressive structures. You think of, just to imagine building the circle of the angels, let alone all of Gerizim, from scratch, is pretty mind-boggling. Think of the plumbing, and everything, and something this gigantic. It's just, it's hard to comprehend. The wiring and the plumbing, for a structure that's this big,
What is it? The memorial alone has a million personality servicing?
Right.
Just servicing.
Okay. Let's pause for a moment and just reflect on the glory of that is Gerizim.